Here for the Lowe's early Black Friday deals? You're right on time for some of our biggest savings. We're talking up to 50% off select major appliances, plus up to an extra 25% off when you bundle select major appliances. Holiday lights going up soon? Select ladders are up to 50% off right now. Get Black Friday prices without the Black Friday crowds. Lowe's, we help you save. Valid through 11/19. Selection varies by location. Select locations only. While supplies last. See Lowe's.com for more details.
Of two women near Breckenridge, investigators make an arrest in this cold case. It was DNA, blood on a glove inside one of the victim's backpacks, that along with advances in technology that helped crack this case.
Welcome back to another episode of Seven Deadly Sinners. Thank you guys so much for listening. And Greg is going to be a guest on the show again this week because I'm enjoying that. So, Greg,
She talks to me all day anyway.
Yeah, you mostly ignore me, but yeah, I talk at you.
Well, now I get to just kind of try to focus it all to the podcast recording.
Perfect. Yeah, that's what you're saving up your energy for. We're joking. We love each other. But I thought this was an interesting one for you because I have a Colorado story for you and for you listeners as well. And I wanted him to weigh in on a few things as I tell this story, as it hits pretty close to home. A story solved by DNA nearly four decades later of the murder of two young, promising women with their whole lives ahead of them in January of 1982. Now, this was a time where hitchhiking wasn't scary. It was normal. No one thought much of it. But then stories like this and the toolbox killers, which we may cover soon. That is a horrific one, though.
Toolbox killer. It's a cool title. Sounds like a horror movie.
It is a horror, a real life horror movie.
Sounds like Saw before Saw.
It's a real life horror movie where two... This always totally throws me off how two... serial killer, deviant, horrible people find each other. Like, what is that conversation? How are you just like, hey, you're at the bar, and you're like, so you...
I think it's like physics, natural laws, you know, they attract each other. It just happens. They're in the same seedy places. They think the same. So like, I don't know.
I guess so. I don't know. I mean,
musicians find me.
Yeah. But, like, I just don't know how that conversation starts. But anyways, that's a horrific one. But if we ever cover it, we'll talk about it then. But, you know, so, like, this story, the toolbox killers, and then other ones, like, I think the Hillside Strangler even, they were picking up hitchhikers. And I think eventually people realized that you cannot trust a stranger.
Man, the 70s, 80s, you know, like, hitchhiking, hijacking planes, just all commonplace.
Yeah. I mean, Tom picked up a hitchhiker fairly recently, so our neighbor, neighbor.
Yeah. I mean, some people still do it.
Yeah.
Heck, I mean, I was, when you said hitchhiking, I was actually thinking about our new buddy was telling me that, you know, he was just like, yeah, I was bored, so, you know, I had a car, but I was like, gas is expensive, so I just went hitchhiking. And people do it.
I guess if you're a guy, it's like slightly different, but there's a ton of stories like the I-70 killer, like connected to Herb Baumeister, who we covered. I-70? I think so. It's the one from Indiana or whatever. Yep, but he would,
that'd be the one. That's what we take to get out to Colorado.
Yeah. So and this story takes place along that as well. But he was picking up, if he was the I-70 killer, he was picking up like male hitchhikers. Man or woman, it doesn't necessarily matter. And I think what makes this story interesting is because, okay, I don't think I would ever pick someone up. However, when the weather is absolutely horrible here in Colorado and I'm seeing someone walking down the road in our tiny town, I think, like, I feel so bad. I'm like, should I give him a ride? Like,
no, you're not allowed to.
Okay, obviously not, but...
if I'm with you, then it's maybe.
Yeah, but who knows? So that's an interesting part of the story, though. Okay. So near picturesque.
If we're in the truck, we could like let them in the truck bed. Let them lay down, drive them home real quick. If they're in, like.
Yeah, that's like a lot more fun, like getting the wind and the snow. And
No, they could lay down.
Okay. So near picturesque Breckenridge, Colorado. Sadly and tragically, two young women vanished on the same night in an insane snowstorm. And Greg, you know the area. It's a beautiful ski town, but the snow on that pass can be incredibly dangerous. And I'm not going to give it away yet, but a very eerie and chilling detail from that night involves that ungodly snowstorm.
Okay. Snow is, I mean, I have never been in a blizzard until this year. Like in Indiana, like we got some 12, 15 inches, you know, here or there. Like actually manageable and taken care of in a timely enough manner that like you're getting to the store within 48 hours. Like the roads will be plowed. You might have to shovel your own driveway.
Yeah, because you live in the suburbs in Indiana.
Like, I understand. That's what I'm saying. I had never experienced like a blizzard until we got 40 some inches of snow back in November. You were with Kristen. Luke was here.
I was in LA. I was like, I'm not coming. I was like, I'm good. I can't get a flight out. I'm just
we wouldn't
stay.
Have been able to get you.
Yeah, but perfect. I was like, I took my sweet ass time coming back.
I mean, treacherous. Like I could, I don't feel like I saved anyone's life, but the man who I did go get pick up out of a snowdrift, and I knew who he was, you know, picked him up out of a snowdrift and took him to my house. And he actually stayed the night here because there's no way we could get him up to his trailer where he lived. And I mean, and then, you know, we basically had to save Adam and Kendra too. We took the tractor. And the only way to get through that much snow was like driving a tractor. So Luke and I drove our tractor out to pull them out. They had got stuck. They shouldn't have been out driving in the first place, but.
Yeah, so. You have some general knowledge of this type of scenario.
Yes, maybe I went into too much detail.
No, you did not. No,
it
no,
was
no.
wild. It was just like it suddenly became life or death, and you like I was like, whoa, I can't see. There's so much snow coming down, and then there's so much snow on the ground. It becomes hard to walk, and then if you fall, like there's snow drifts that are no joke, like 6 feet high. Like they're just bigger. You're like lost in snow, and there's no when you're in that. There's you don't hit the ground, so you can't like push up. You just go deeper.
It's like I feel like you know what's going to happen in the story, even though you know nothing about it.
I'm just telling you about my own blizzard experience.
Okay, well, so you get the gist, okay?
Got it.
This is the story of the murders in the Rocky Mountains of Bobby Joe Oberholzer and Annette Schnee. And a 70-plus-year-old man who was put behind bars just recently, in 2022, for two murders he allegedly committed when he was just 40 years old. So come with me on this very sad journey that has some very shocking and crazy elements to it.
Hitchhiking near Breckenridge in January of 1982, Oberholzer's body was found on Hoosier Pass the next day.
So let's meet our first victim, who was tragically taken from her loved ones. Barbara Jo Burns, who eventually everyone started calling her Bobby Jo, she was born on Christmas Day in 1952 to her parents, Thomas Edward Burns and Dory Sardick in Wisconsin. She had siblings. Her dad was the owner of an electric appliance repair store. She was beautiful, blonde-haired, blue-eyed, just sweet to the core. Bubbly.
Bobby Joe.
Bobby Joe. I actually like that name. When I was writing this, I was like, should we switch our girl's name if we're blessed enough to have children from Nellie to Bobby Joe? I was like, I kind of like it.
I kind of like Bobby Joe.
I've always liked boys' names for girls.
I usually don't, but I like Bobby Joe.
Yeah, Bobby Joe. Bobby so Joe. She was meant to live out west. She was meant to live in the small town of Alma, which we'll get into in a second, but because she loved horses. Well, she loved all animals, but especially horses. So she graduated high school in 1971, where she met her high school sweetheart, Jeff. Shortly after high school, because obviously they fell in love like right away, and got together. And they're from, yeah,
Jeff and Bobby Joe.
Yeah. What is this, a John Mellencamp song?
That's exactly what I was thinking. Yeah. You read my mind.
But right after high school, they gave birth to their first child. And they got married 5 years afterwards. And she took his last name. But they were kind of over Wisconsin, which I imagine, no offense to Wisconsin. You guys, I'm sure, have great cheese. I've never been there. Do we drive through Wisconsin when we drive from Indiana? No.
Wisconsin's basically always out of the way unless you're going to Wisconsin.
Okay. Okay. Wisconsin is where the Revelry, the band that's doing our music festival.
Shout out Driftless Revelers.
Yes. Revelers. There
we go. Potentially the funniest comedy band. I don't know if they're a comedy band or not, but they're hilarious. They're hilarious.
And by the way, we're having a music festival here on our ranch in August of 2025.
That's true. Why don't we just take a quick moment to shout out Rugby Rocks. August 9th, 2025. Full harvest moon going to be rising out east over the plains. It'll look like Tatooine from our ranch. It's going to be incredible. We got 14 bands and the list is growing.
Yep.
Great bands, mainly Colorado bands, but a couple California bands, couple Indiana Hoosier bands, and
it's gonna be a blast. I might do stand up, and our buddy Austin, who used to throw like warehouse parties, DJing,
interdimensional light being, is coming back.
Yeah. Coming back for his, and his stuff's actually good. It's just going to be fun.
DJ set.
Yeah. People can camp here. They can park here. It's going to be fun.
It's true. You can do both of those things.
Yeah.
You can even do them simultaneously. You could park and camp in your car.
Mm-hmm.
And Rachel is the master of ceremonies, you know, and we hope to see you there.
Yeah, it's going to be fun. We're going to post a link very soon in one of the next few episodes or on our Instagram.
Yeah, website's going live soon, pre-sale, all that stuff.
Okay.
This is not an advertisement. This is the podcast.
Yeah, okay. We're good now. So Bobby Joe and Jeff married in July of 1977, 5 years after falling in love in high school and having their first child. And yeah, they wanted to leave Wisconsin, like we said earlier. And how they found the tiny mountain town of Alma, Colorado, I'll never know. I mean, there wasn't really internet in 1982. And
we're also kind of like ones to talk. Living in the tiny mountain town of Aguilar, Colorado.
Well.
Arguably smaller than Alma.
No, Alma. I know. Wait for it.
I'm waiting.
Alma had less than 200 people living there in 1982.
Whoa. Aguilar's so, double that.
Yeah, we've beat him. Now we're really selling this festival. Come to this. Come to this. No, but we're also from a cool old mining town, and I'm going to go into Alma's history because I think it's pretty fascinating. And yeah, like back in the 80s, like how would you even find that place to move to? Maybe they were just like, let's just head west. And they thought like, oh, okay, the beautiful Rocky Mountains of Colorado will be, you know, a beautiful place. And then they just happened to this town. And it is actually pretty cool. So Alma was the supply and service center back in the day for Park County Mines and the smelting center of South Park. The town was established at the junction of Buckskin Creek and the South Platte River, 7 miles north of Fairplay, another big mining town, as a result of new silver discoveries.
I was saying the Platte River, I know that's got gold.
Do you?
I've heard a thing or two from Mountain Joe.
Oh, okay. Alma received its post office on March 7, 1873, and the town incorporated in the same year. Alma is perhaps most notable as the highest incorporated town in the United States at 10,355 feet above sea level.
Wow, tallest town in America. Yeah. Maybe that's how they ended up there.
Maybe. Well, that's probably why the weather was absolutely horrible that night.
Makes sense.
Yeah. So one story reports that in 1872, J.B. Stansdale and Abraham Berg built the first house in Alma for a merchant who named the town after his wife, Alma Jones. It's pretty cute.
That's adorable.
Yeah. Others report...
Hey, if we were here first, I would have named it something like the unincorporated town of Free Range Rachel.
Mm-hmm. That works. And I think that, and you're going to come to find out that Bobby Joe was free range and a fighter, and I admire her. So the town is about 2 hours west of Denver and is located near several small sort of haunted mining towns, some ghost towns here in Colorado. Back in the 1800s, a town would be a huge gold or silver or copper mining boom. And then it would dry up and people would leave. So there's a lot of ghost towns there. And it's also located very close to some very luxurious skiing towns that you may have heard of, like Aspen or Vail or Breckenridge. And Alma is where Bobby Joe and her husband Jeff decided to relocate to from Wisconsin after dating and falling in love, like I said, in high school, having a baby shortly thereafter. Greg and I have certainly driven through Alma. I actually almost went there and got a hotel room to write this story because I was curious to see if I had actually been there and seen it. But I checked the maps and when we went on our like honeymoon, you know, trip, and we've definitely driven through there. And I definitely drove through there with my dad from Oregon on our road trip. And we, in the middle of May, encountered a terrifying snowstorm, and I am terrified of driving in snow, so I have to get in the back seat of the truck so I don't like shriek and like freak Greg or my dad or anyone else that's driving out. And that happened in the middle of May on this mountain pass that you're going to hear about shortly.
Yeah, you know, only in Colorado. Well, not only in Colorado, but if you love May snowstorms,
yeah,
Colorado's the place.
Yeah,
it's about to be April, but I know there will be one lingering, sneaky April snowstorm. Just when you like get comfortable and you're like, it's spring. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm going to put my winter clothes away. It's like, ah,
mm-hmm.
8 inches.
Or a hailstorm where you run into a tree and
or
break
storm.
Your back. You got the wrong guy. It's not me. I didn't do that. Anyways, it's also pretty close to Buena Vista, which is one of the coolest places. I don't know how I'm doing like the geography or whatever of Colorado, but I'm trying to like paint the picture of what this area looks like and how treacherous the weather can be. So it's fairly close to Buena Vista, which if you come from where we live, you'd go through Canyon City, which is also a cool, weird old town.
How much is the Colorado Tourism Board paying you for this episode?
I don't know. I just am fascinated by where it is. Well, come to Colorado. Fine.
300 days of sunshine. So many amazing mountain towns.
Well, I had one more point to make, and then I'll get off the ranch. I'll get off the Colorado Tourism
Bird's
Board.
Bird's nest for breakfast. Korean barbecue at night.
Mm-hmm. I'll get off of it in a second. So if you're coming from Southern Colorado, you would go through Canyon City, which is also this weird town that has literally a jail at the end of it that bleeds into the town that they've shut down, and it's now like a museum. We haven't gone to it yet, but it's just a cool, and it's like right next to the Royal Gorge, which is absolutely
the
gorgeous.
Prison Museum?
Yeah, Prison Museum. And yeah. It's also next to
Great Winery.
Yep. It's also next to Florence, Colorado, or near Florence, Colorado, where the only Supermax prison in the world is at, where El Chapo and Dwight York, whom we covered, mm-hmm. I talked about, went to on the podcast. Whatever.
It's underground. We drove by it. They wouldn't let us in.
Yeah.
No surprise.
Yeah. Because it's underground. They only get 1 hour. They could maybe see out for like 1 hour.
Richard like pulled in like, oh, wrong turn. Like, oh, ma'am, this is the only turn in the last 7 miles.
Oopsie-daisy.
Oops, yeah. While I'm here, I got a podcast.
You want to talk? Anywho, they also think that El Chapo, I recently researched this, is capable of escaping at any time because he bribes.
Well.
Prison, whatever. Okay. So like we said, it's near Breckenridge, which that's the more important part. And it had about 1,200 people at the time in Breckenridge, the ski resort area. And Bobby Joe worked at a real estate developer's office in Breckenridge. And she loved her job. And one day, she called her husband because she was really good at her job. So in January of 1982, she called her husband and she was like, I just got promoted to be manager. Like, and she was thrilled. And so she said, I'm going to go out and like celebrate with some of my coworkers. And so their office happened to be, I mean, and again, there's like five businesses in this place. Although there looks like there's quite a good food truck that I looked up on their website recently. So they have their real estate developer's office, and it's what I imagine what Mission and Bell is in. Like, it, they call it a mall, but it's like probably just like a small office building with like a few office type things in it, and like, you know, restaurants.
Used to be like a hotel in 1890.
Yeah.
And they're using the
old stone
facade.
There was a bordello maybe in there.
Yeah,
there were some dancing girls on the top.
I didn't want to say that, but.
Yeah. But anyways, so her real estate developer office building is in there. She gets this great news that she, you know, gets promoted. She calls her husband, tells him that. He's thrilled for her. And she tells him, you don't need to come and pick me up. I'm going to get a ride with my coworkers. Okay. So then they go to a place called the Village Inn Pub, I believe. And they, you know, have a couple drinks. They have some fun. But her coworkers must have, in my mind, I'm picturing they like went out for a smoke or something, and then she didn't smoke. And then she was kind of like, okay, I feel very much for her. It's probably like how I would be, where it's like, I'm tired. I think I need to go home now. Like, you know?
Yeah, standard Rachel move.
Yeah, but she didn't tell her coworkers. She told the bartender, okay, will you please tell my friends? I'm just going to leave. I'll find my way home. You know,
basically an Irish goodbye.
Yep. Which is something I've done often. And so she leaves. And again, like I said, hitchhiking was very common during that time, and so common, especially in the snow in this area. There was actually almost like a designated area, but it wasn't like, you know, like the city designated it. It was just like people knew you go to this spot and you can flag someone down.
The locals know.
Yeah, exactly.
Makeshift bus stop.
Yeah. And no one wants to see someone freezing in the snow. It was below 20 that night, and it was just like,
I wouldn't even be outside.
Yeah, it was just bad.
Seems like a drunken decision there, Bobby Joe.
No, that's not victim blame.
Well, I'm sorry. She should have called Jeff on the bar phone.
Well, apparently he had been preparing dinner that night. That was like his duty. He was with the kids, and she was trying to get home for that because he had had a dinner waiting. Well, her husband, Jeff, had fallen asleep after preparing dinner on the couch. She fell asleep, so didn't know that she had not come home. So she hitches a ride with a stranger. No one knows who this person is until, again, 40 years later. Hitches a ride with a stranger and is never seen again alive. She is found the next day. So her husband, Jeff, wakes up from his nap, and he basically thought, okay, maybe Bobby just like stayed out later with her friends than she was supposed to. Like, she didn't come home for the dinner he had prepared. But he started to call her friends that she had been out with because he was really, really worried, and none of them had seen her. No one had seen her. So after 8 p.m., nobody had contacted. So she called her husband at 6 p.m. to tell him the good news and that she was going to go out with friends. So she wasn't out that long. And by 8 p.m. when he'd called around, no one had heard from her. So he finally decided to take matters into his own hands. And around 1:30 a.m., he decided to try to go find her. He did go down to the police station to try to report her missing and try to get their help. But they said they needed to wait till morning. Like, you know how these things go. So like 24 hours, you know.
Like, she's probably cheating on you, Jeff. Get out of here.
Exactly.
I ain't going out in this snowstorm.
Yeah. Or she's a runaway. That's what they usually do with kids, which is terrible. But he went to her office first at the Bell Tower Mall to see if maybe she'd fallen asleep there. But the building was locked up when he arrived. And yeah, goes to the police station. They're like, yeah, not going out in the snowstorm.
No help.
Yeah, no help at all. So he was still extremely, extremely worried, and he gathered a search team of his friends.
Okay.
And him and several of his local friends and acquaintances got in his truck, and a lot of them were skiers because they knew that maybe they would need to, you know, do like, what is that? Cross-country skiing.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, type thing to.
They're familiar with deep pack.
Yeah, exactly. But before that, back at home, when he was preparing to start searching, he received a call from a local rancher who said this. He told him that he had found Bobby Joe's driver's license just laying in the snow off of U.S. 285, Highway 285. Which one is that? Do you know?
Yeah, we've been on 285.
Is that the one that connects to U.S. 70?
It does.
Okay. So, at this point, Jeff's like, I'm all in. My friends are going to help me. Like, yeah. How devastating would
that
be?
That's terrifying. Also, like, in 1982, crazy that a dude had his number. Or maybe driver's license had phone numbers of that. I don't know.
I don't know. Or he could have, like, looked her up in a phone book, like, her name, looked at the phone book.
Well, probably just like, this is Bobby Joe. I got to call Jeff. That's how it is. I mean,
it was a small town. Yeah, everyone knew each other. Yeah. So he heads out with his friends. So they actually make a trip towards the rancher's home because that's, you know, they found it like near the rancher's, or the rancher found it near his home. But after 12 miles of driving Highway 285, Jeff noticed something familiar lying just off the road in a snowbank, and told his friend to pull over. The night that she disappeared, she was wearing a blue colored backpack, and that's exactly what Jeff saw just off the road.
Is getting.
Yeah. When he approached the backpack, it was the only item that he found, but what he found next made his stomach sink. Lying next on the ground next to the backpack was a tannish gray colored winter glove, and it was covered in blood.
Oh, God. That would be. Oh, man. Such a gut punch. I don't know how you could.
Yeah.
Not break down right there.
Yeah. And beside the glove was also like a tissue paper, like rolled up and covered in blood. So like any woman, or what you would find in my blue, I carry a tiny blue backpack with little birds on it.
Little birdie backpack.
Yeah. He found just like her makeup, maybe a hairbrush, I think. And business cards for Jeff's business. So Jeff had started an appliance, like repair, you know, stocking business in
town.
Just
like Bobby Joe's dad.
Exactly. So there was a stack of business cards in her backpack as well.
Man.
So Jeff calls the police and he's like, yo, I found her backpack. A rancher found her driver's license. I found her glove. And then 5 miles apart, we found her other glove.
Like, I think it's time you guys get in your patrol cars.
Yeah. Like.
Did they?
She's clearly been abducted at this point. But no, they did not.
Oh my God.
They did not. So they have to go, him and his buddies have to go 11,000 feet up. 11,539 feet up Hoosier Pass.
Hoosier Pass?
Yeah. Which marks the Continental Divide. And
wow, I got to find out more about Hoosier Pass.
Yeah, because that's from Indiana. Huh?
Had to be a Hoosier who founded it, got there first. Mm. No surprise.
Well, the same carload of friends at 3 p.m. the next day on January 7th, they go out and really try to search for her. So they have all their clues, you know.
Yeah.
And this, you'll find out later, does not make the cops happy that, like, he, like, went and did his own search. It also made him seem like a suspect. Like, what are you doing? Like, and how did you find this stuff so easily? Well, sadly, her remains were not found very far from the road. Or her dead body, because it was only the next day she was found. So
yeah, it seems like it's frustrating this guy didn't get caught for 40 years because he's just, like, willy-nilly throwing the stuff out on the road. I mean,
it gets far weirder.
Maybe he thought it was going to be covered up in snow, and so it's a good thing Jeff was Johnny on the spot.
Yeah.
Or Jeffrey on the spot.
Yeah, it gets far weirder than that. But you are correct. So, thankfully, it wasn't him that found his dead wife. It was his friends on the skis. And But 100 yards down the slope, one of the men noticed something lying down on the embankment off the highway in the snow, and it appeared to be a human body. And it ended up being 29-year-old Bobby Joe.
All I keep thinking about, just because, like, ever since you made the little birdie backpack connection, I just keep imagining it being you and me finding your gloves, and just how much, like, I would hunt that man down. It wouldn't take me 40 years, that's all I'm going to say.
Yeah, well, Jeff did try, and it made him look weird to the police for a little bit, which you'll hear about.
Fuck the police.
Okay, NWA.
I'm just a big Jeff fan.
Okay. I am too. I really... So, his friends were smart.
I'm just saying, if my wife didn't come home, like, I'm not just going to go home and wait.
Yeah, just like, well, okay, well, just relax.
Yeah.
She's probably sad. Oh, you just made a sad face. But his friends were smart, though, in this way. They decided it was best not to move or touch the body, because you shouldn't do that. And usually, if it's that cold out, the body's, like, well-preserved. So, later when the police got involved, like I said, they were not happy that Jeff decided to do this and his buddies decided to do this. Like, it kind of probably made them look stupid, you know?
The police? Well, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, but that's like every county Mountie.
Yeah.
In every town in America.
Yeah.
I just wish the stories were more like the cops saved the day than the cops totally blew it. And just time and time again.
Yeah. But the skiers decided it was best not to touch or move the body, like I said. But they climbed the embankment to Colorado Highway 9. I can't picture where that is. Can you picture where that is? Must be a smaller one off of...
I have some ideas, but I'm not looking at a map.
Okay. Anyways. But basically, she was about 100 yards away from the highway and 100 yards down off the embankment. And it's pretty crazy. It's pretty sad how close she was to someone maybe finding her, because she did not die from her gunshot wounds. She was shot twice, but she fought. You could tell she fought, because she, like, slid down the embankment trying to, like, get out. But because the conditions were so bad, she ended up, this is very sad, trigger warning, dying alone in the snow, likely of, like, hypothermia or something, bleeding out. Yeah. It's pretty sad. It didn't appear that she had been sexually assaulted, so I have no idea what the motive is, because this man went on to...
Well, maybe he was going to, and she fought him.
That's... okay, that's a good point. Yeah, that's... Yeah, she could have just...
There's something, though, like... I just keep trying to put myself in the husband's shoes, and it's like... Obviously, you don't want your loved one to die in any way, but, like... There's something that'd be much more traumatic if the body was found and sexually assaulted. Like an extra spiritual gut punch. But there's something to, like, if you knew
that she fought.
That she fought.
And maybe she just quietly, like died in the snow.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, but there's something about fighting, like, that you just... maybe just one small sliver of solace.
Yeah.
Like, that you can just be like, she was a fighter.
Mm-hmm. Oh, she was a hell of a fighter.
Didn't get taken.
Yeah. She was a fighter.
You got a better chance at tackling a brick wall.
That's what Greg's been saying about me.
Than taking my girl down.
I think you might be right on that point, that he maybe had tried to assault her, because she was also found with two plastic zip ties attached to her left wrist, meaning they were trying to maybe, like, restrain her. And so maybe she, I don't know if you could actually rip off one zip tie, and maybe she made a run for it.
Yeah, I mean, if it was just on one wrist.
So, yeah.
Maybe he was going to, like, put him, I don't know, like, you could do one zip tie, then one zip tie, then you put a zip tie through both. I bet that's what happened, and she broke it.
Yeah, she broke it, yeah.
Like, makeshift handcuffs.
Yeah. So maybe that's what was going to happen, you know?
I hope she fucking hurt that guy like hell. In the process.
I think that's where some of the blood was from.
Oh.
So this fighter, during her autopsy, they found that she had scrape marks on her knees as if she'd fallen in some gravel while escaping. And then the two gunshot wounds with a 357 handgun.
Where were the gunshot wounds?
So one was to her right breast that appeared to just, you know, like ricochet or graze off of it. And the other one pierced the right side of her back. So that was probably the fatal one. But it's also very possible she did die of exposure, you know, like hypothermia.
Yeah.
And just...
I'd say if from shot in the back seems like she was running away.
Well, yeah. Good call. Because the evidence points that she did initially make it out alive. And she was she was running and like skidding down the mountain, just trying to get out of there, which is just horrifying. Just so sad. And she was just right off the road. Like, if she could have just flagged someone down, you know?
Well, yeah.
All right.
That's how this whole mess started, though.
Yes. So, the next very interesting and eerie part is the strangest thing that when detectives finally got involved, that they discovered the day... that they got involved, that still really is baffling. So her husband had gotten her this like key ring, like weapon thing. Like, you know, you got me that birdie alarm thing, but this was like an actual, like it had like a hook on it. It was like, I don't know, not like brass knuckles, but something because he knew that she was privy to like hitchhiking or whatever, and you know,
bit of a wild card, just like somebody I know.
I have no idea who you're talking about.
You got weapons.
I have mace. I have other and thing.
A couple knives.
Yeah, I couldn't get a small gun because I lost my ID and then refound it after getting another ID, and I had two IDs in two different states. Then they were like, "Hey, you seem weird."
It's just illegal to get a gun if you have a license in two states are active.
I lost my California one. So then now I got a Colorado
Rachel's
one.
Rachel's on a watch list.
Yes. So any who's will be.
It wasn't a real planned thing. We were just out for a date. Stopped at Big R. She's like, "Ooh, I like this gun. It's the color of the truck."
Yeah.
Maybe I can get it as an accessory. She's like, "Hey, only $120. Like, sign me up there." Big R Bob. And he was like, "I'll sell you a gun, miss."
Yeah, yeah.
He filled out all these forms and came back and was like, "Well, looks like we have a little problem.
You're on a bit of a watch list.
Are you a resident of California as well?"
I was like, yeah. I had my ID there. I lost it in my luggage on our stand-up tour. Then I got a Colorado one, but then I refound it about a week later.
That was probably just God being like, "Rachel, you shouldn't have a gun.
You should just stay home, ma'am." Anyways, so
she's got a weapon. Jeff gave her some, you know, self-protection.
Yes. So the detectives find this like key ring thing. And then they find an orange like footy sock, you know, like the ones you would wear with like gym shoes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But the weird thing is that Bobby Joe was found with both of her socks on. Like, she had other socks on, and neither one of them was orange, but there was just a random orange, you know, footy sock.
It was a dude's sock.
No.
Or it was just like a random sock that is just, you know, some redneck dropped it. No. It's just not connected.
No.
Okay.
Nice try, though, Clue Boss.
Well, all right, Clue Boss.
Jeez.
They call me the Clue Boss.
Okay. But they start looking into her husband because it's like, okay, you found all this stuff so quickly. And he also starts trying to do his own investigation, like interviewing, like, you know, people downtown, like, and asking questions because he's just panicked about this. So they... you know, like they always suspect the husband. And he had no like real alibi because he was at home by himself or with his kids, you know. passed out after making dinner. You know, he didn't really have anything. So they question him, rule him out, whatever. They really have no clues at all besides like, okay, she's been found. They, you know, they have blood. They have, you know, they have this orange sock.
And that seems like some serious leads. I guess there wasn't DNA back then.
There was, and DNA is how this gets solved. Okay. The blood, you know.
Yeah, well, it should have been tire tracks or snow, maybe.
Well, again, you'll see. So on Saturday, July 3rd, 1982, a 13-year-old boy is fishing near the area and about 5 miles away from where Bobby Joe's body was found. He saw something floating face down in the water. And he realized, as he looked closer, it was human remains. And he ran home and he phoned the police. It's just so devastating. Sorry if I'm pausing because I'm just like, ugh.
It's so being traumatic.
A 13-year-old boy just like, I'm just trying to go get some trout.
And reminds me of Stand By Me.
Yeah.
Also, like, he didn't tell his parents. He called the police himself.
I guess so.
Pretty brave kid.
Well, maybe he didn't get to, you know, talk to his parents like that quickly. I don't know. But after searching the contents of the victim's jacket that she was wearing, they found her wallet, a license, and a social security card, and they figured out that it was a 20-year-old woman named Annette Sheen. So they're realizing that maybe these people guess. Are... What?
Annette was wearing one orange sock.
You are correct.
Boom.
You are correct.
The clue boss is back.
Yeah, you are correct. So I don't quite know how that happened. Like, did he... Because they went missing on the same night. So I don't know...
Whoa.
Yeah, he did both of these murders on the same night. So I don't know if...
I wonder if... Annette was in the car.
I kind of wonder that too. Did he pick one up and then pick the other one up?
Had to be. She maybe.
And then they both went running and.
Man, I don't. It's, yeah, maybe. And then he got one back in the truck or.
I don't know, but she was a beautiful girl. She was tall with light brown hair, brown eyes. I guess she was goofy, which I love. And. Again, she was loved by all. I mean,
just like you.
No, but like,
this is making me worried. It's like these murder victims, you know, just seem to have all the same traits.
Because that's, I mean, I guess that's how it goes. I mean, I would never.
I'm glad you're not actually an adult in the 80s because you would have hitchhiked.
Absolutely, I would have. I mean. Yeah, absolutely.
The type of people that pick up hitchhikers, 90% of them, I'm going to say, are like probably pretty cool dudes, pretty good guys that probably listen to classic rock. They're probably like war vets.
That's my favorite.
Exactly. They're your type of folks. Like you'd be like, oh, I'm just going to go out and meet a friend.
Yeah, that's what I do.
Luckily, you were born in the 80s, so you're now an adult in the
You don't know how close millennia. I was when I was listening to the CB radio in my dad's old truck the other day to just being like, I should talk back to these guys. This seems interesting. When they were saying, Mayday, Mayday, I was like, where's the Mayday? What's happening?
Fill me in.
Fill me in. I will help. No, I'm not joking. When I was researching this podcast just yesterday, and shout out to the Going West podcast. A lot of my research did come from theirs because I was listening while researching.
While going west.
Yeah, and taking my own voice notes, but I just want to give them credit. They have a great podcast, a great husband-wife duo team.
Just like us.
But
and your phone died, so you're like, why don't I just flip on the old CB?
Yeah, that's exactly what happened. And I was just like, well, CB radio, what happens now?
You're such an old soul. Just cruising to the CB. Favorite station's Channel 6.
No, but I'm not joking. I literally... heard, like it was going in and out because I was on the back roads of our town and I ended up driving straight to our, my best friend who in our town that stayed with me in a hotel room the night before, after a pretty, yeah. Anyways, I was like listening to this and I was like, I'm going to keep driving. I'm going to just drive straight to his house. I was like, I got to tell him. Like they were screaming, Mayday, Mayday. And then I swear I heard like helicopter, like, da-da-da-da-da-da. I'm like, what?
So if a plane crash or military crash is reported in Southern Colorado anytime in the future, you heard it here first.
Yep. There we go.
I have a feeling it was probably a military operation, and
we'll never know.
Classified. And in case you were wondering, yes, she was heading to our friend Austin's Pyramid House in the Woods. Same Austin from the episode Pyramid House in the Woods, just a few episodes back.
Well, I wasn't purposely heading there. I was just sort of wandering and like listening to research and like Googling stuff and like writing voice notes. Rachel. Yeah. And eating chicken ramen flavored Funyuns. Anywho. Okay.
Yeah, she's obsessed with these.
They're delicious.
Literally went and got some for me and my dad earlier today. Like, you need to try these.
Yep.
Tell me I'm not crazy.
Yep. And you admit they were delicious. So, anyways, back to Annette. She was beautiful, like, goofy. She had moved out to Colorado. She wanted to become a flight attendant. And she just, you know, she was just a beautiful, liked by everyone type of person. She attended college, but after a year in college, she decided to move to Colorado and just kind of decided to locate herself between Breckenridge and Alma, which again, all very small. I mean, Breckenridge is not small, Alma small, but just crazy, like mountain town. Like the weather is insane. I can't imagine being like a single girl, 21 years old, going to live where it's like where I would have a panic attack driving on the, you know?
It's true. But just think about it. You could have been like a single girl in 1882.
Oh, I would have worked at Pearl DeVere's whorehouse in Cripple Creek. They made the equivalent of $9,000 a day in today's money. There was not a lot of other opportunities.
My goodness.
I know exactly what I would have done.
Well, I'm glad I got you in the modern age.
Anyways, she got a job being like a housemaid at the Holiday Inn. But the hours were, you know, she wasn't getting a lot of hours that night. So she had another job at like a kind of a Western style bar. But in between her two shifts at the Holiday Inn and then the bar, she needed to pick up a prescription. A woman does remember seeing her there, but for whatever reason, didn't call in or tell detectives or couldn't really describe her or the situation, but just says that she definitely remembers her. So she left the pharmacy. And that was pretty much the last time that she was seen. So she never made it home that day after heading to her shift at the flip side. And 2 days later, she was reported missing by a colleague of hers at the Holiday Inn where she missed her shift 2 days later. Her mother jumps right into action just like Jeff did and calls investigators and when they went and figured out that she was missing, they went into her room. Everything had been untouched, you know, searching for clues. But when Annette's body was discovered, she was wearing a pair of pants, a blue jacket with a single bullet hole in it, a light brown pair of boots, and a long striped sock on her right foot. But when Detective Jim Hartke removed her left foot, he was baffled at what he saw. It was an orange footsie sock that was on her left foot. So, you discovered the clue, Greg.
That's right.
All right. So, basically, most likely, these murders that happened on the same night were connected.
Most likely. Gotta be.
Yeah. But let me tell you the strangest part. Other suspects were interrogated. But Alan Lee Phillips was one that was really on their radar. They tested his DNA, but DNA was not that great back in the day. But 40 years later, they get a CODIS hit, a relative of his connected to him. And they were able to bring him in for another round of questioning. And he was arrested. But the craziest part of this story is a man sees his arrest on the news and remembers that fateful night. Do you want to know why, Greg?
Well, yeah.
So on the night of January 6th, 1982, around 11 p.m., a Jefferson County sheriff named Harold Bray was on a commercial flight headed over the Rocky Mountains when he peered out the window to see something strange below. It just gives me chills. It's like,
whoa, from the air?
Yeah, it's
on a commercial flight?
It's hard to read it. Like, really gives me chills.
Okay.
He saw the flashes of light signaling an SOS.
What?
So this detective, or the sheriff, notified the pilot who made an emergency search and rescue call to the town closest to the signal. So it was near Guanella Pass, which is like also 11,000 feet up. And it's about 40 miles from Dumont, an hour's drive from Breckenridge. And they notice like a middle-aged or like, you know, 40-something-year-old man with shoulder-length hair sitting in a pickup truck, flagging them. And that man was Alan Lee Phillips, giving an SOS because he had gotten stuck after likely dumping both of those girls' bodies.
Oh, so they literally found him. Like, the SOS was responded to and got him?
Yes, and they picked him up.
And he had...
And he was like, oh, thank God you got me. And he had just killed two women. It's bone chilling.
They should have left him out to die.
Yeah, just like kicked him into the snow.
But like, good on that sheriff, like, you know.
He said, oh, thank God I'm saved. Like, you came with like...
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
That's...
But he's in prison now.
Yeah, so they find him, you know, 40-something years later. He's 71 years old. He throws away... So he was a miner, or he worked in a mine. He was like more of like a electrical something in a mine. And then he was a truck driver at a certain point and went on to have a wife and kids, which is so eerie.
That's so eerie.
It's so eerie. It makes my skin crawl. But because of that CODIS hit, they started kind of like tracking him, and he had thrown away like something from Sonic, like a trash thing at their truck stop or at the Sonic, I don't know. And then they pulled the DNA from that and were able to, you know, link him to this. And allegedly, he is the killer because he is in prison now. Well, he actually died in 2023, I think.
Did he admit to it, or did he try to maintain his innocence?
Well, what happened was this. All I know is this. A Colorado man has been convicted of first-degree murder and other charges in the cold case slayings of two women whose bodies were found near the mountain resort town of Breckenridge, Colorado in 1982. Alan Lee Phillips, 71, was convicted by a jury Thursday. This is Thursday of 2022, after a 2.5-week trial. Jurors deliberated for 5 hours, according to reports. Phillips was arrested last year in the mountain hamlet of Dumont, west of Denver, after local, state, and federal authorities using DNA evidence identified him as a suspect in the killings of Annette Schnee, 21, and Barbara Bobby Joe Oberholzer, 29. Bobby Joe was a fighter and is a hero. She fought back, and because of that, we were able to get DNA evidence to convict Annette and Bobby Joe's killer after all this time, said 11th Judicial District Attorney Linda Stanley. It's crazy to me that he went on to have a family, live a full life, and gets caught at 71 years old. It's very, even though, well, who knows how many people he may have killed, but but, you know, it's very much like the Golden State Killer, where He was an old man who went on to have a family and had killed dozens of people. Like, how you get away with something for so long is just unfathomable to me.
Better late than never, I suppose, but it seems like they should have, like, had this one figured out sooner. Especially if, I mean, why don't you put that, who the hell's out at that time? There's an SOS call, like, what was the guy doing? Yeah. They saved him, but, like, did no one interrogate him? And did no one, like, you know, look for missing person reports or murders, maybe, or in the 100 miles surrounding that area? Just seems like shoddy police work.
Isn't there something that we covered at one point, or maybe it's just something I've listened to, I don't know, where there was a similar SOS thing, and I think this was like a drug-related, I can't remember, but it was like from a plane, and there was like an SOS, I don't know, I think we covered something at some point, or I just have knowledge of it.
You're hearing Mayday, Mayday on the CB earlier.
No. We either covered it, or it's something that I've written down I wanted to cover, or it had to do with maybe the... quarter horse racing. I don't know.
We've covered plane hijacking, so I don't know. Nothing's ringing too much of a bell.
Well, I'll look into it, or maybe we'll do another one where there's an SOS of an actual criminal. It's like, okay, you need to get found, but you have the balls to just be like, hey, like...
Yeah, like, I'm all for search and rescue, and, like, I'm an adventurer myself. I've climbed plenty of mountains relatively free, solo... Scared Rachel half to death.
Yes.
Done plenty of dumb stuff in my day in the middle of nowhere with no way of being found. But, you know, if I needed search and rescue and they came and got me, I would be like, you know, not upset if they wanted to interview me and ask me what the hell I was doing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. And it's like, yeah, at that time of night, in below 20, and I know that pass. Like, it's terrifying. Like, what are you doing up there, bud?
Yeah. I mean, maybe he had a good alibi.
He also had a bruise on his head, and I think a little bit of blood on him, too.
Okay, like, yeah. Now I'm upset.
Yeah, like... And he was like, oh, I... Okay, they also said he smelled intoxicated or something, or appeared intoxicated. He's like, whoa, I slipped, and I hit my head on the back of the bumper. So that means Bobby Joe did fight, and probably so did Annette. I think that it's very possible that they were both in the car together. He picked both up.
A good detective would have found the gun, checked the magazine, and be like, oh, you've shot some rounds, or you just don't load your clip all the way. I should be a detective.
Yeah, and you're also
Clue
not that,
boss.
You're also not that great of a shot, but... Anyways, well, thank you guys so much for listening. Sorry, we're not trying to joke around about such a heavy case, but
you got to. I mean, I was about ready to cry twice thinking about this.
Oh, it's
my heart goes out to Jeff.
Yeah, and the Bobby Joe, rest in peace. Annette, rest in peace. Their families, like, rest it's in peace. It's a really weird, gross story, and I also find it hard to believe that if you killed two people in one night, this is your first go at it.
Yeah, probably not.
Probably not, but whatever.
Probably not. That's a good point. Well, I hope he rests in stress.
Good. There
not
we go.
Peace. There we go.
All right. Thank you, guys. We'll see you next week. Bye.